I'm sorry, I didn't get that last name.
Wesley Brooks from the Center for Working Families in Atlanta.
Oh, great. Hi, Wesley.
How are you?
I almost messed up, but we record these.
Hi, did someone just join?
Kathy Harrington.
Welcome, Kathy. Did someone else just join, too?
The Green
Hello, team. How you doing?
Someone just joined? If anyone's on speakerphone, you may want to take it off because
Hello?
We'll hear all the background. Who is this we're speaking to? Just joined our group. Okay. Well, as I was saying, and there may be some more people joining us, but that's okay. We let them interrupt and we'll go on. As I was saying, you may want to go off speakerphone so we can...
Lori Suter at the Tohono O'odham Nation Environmental Office.
Great.
Welcome, Lori.
Thank you.
We do record these calls, and we do send out post-session notes and reminders, as you've all gotten. This week we're going to have Cypress Mandela Training Center. Usually before we start, though, we get the news from Washington and the updates on our annual meeting. And Glo, what have you heard lately, or what's new?
Well, mostly Joe Bruss, our project officer at EPA headquarters, has been working on trying to get the different departments of EPA to do a department presentation at the grantee meeting. The grantee meeting is going to be held on September 18th and 19th this year in Alexandria, and the first evening, because it actually does not start until 6 p.m. on that first day, is a lineup of different departments from EPA headquarters to give an overview of their department, because they are also getting involved in the Brownfields program. So mostly that is what Joe's been working on. We did get the EPA attorney confirmed, so there will be a session on the requirements that the grantees need to meet as far as their grants. So that was good to know. As far as the meeting itself, we've gotten almost all of the grantees registered. There are still a few missing. But for the most part, everyone has registered and things are moving along. The deadline for making a hotel reservation was Friday this week. We've been able to get that extended by 1 week. So the new deadline is August 16th. And I don't think we're going to be able to get that backed up anymore. So just everybody needs to get their registrations and reservations made before August 16th.
And all PLC members are also eligible to come. So if you're in a community that's thinking of developing a job training program, sit down with the regional director. Anyone who's on a speakerphone, can you take out the speakerphone?
And do this at the same time.
Okay.
I'm sorry, can I just ask?
I got to be down at 4:30.
Those of us that have the speaker on, can we, like, mute it so we're not hearing everybody's comments? Because I'm missing what Glo and Mike are saying.
Yes. Okay, good.
Thank you.
So one of the things that anyone that's in the PLC is eligible to come to the annual meeting. And so if you're thinking of developing a program, why don't you have them call you directly if they're thinking of it because of the short timeline and they want to attend and they may not have a grant now or they've had a grant in the future, but how could they contact you, Glo? Glo?
Hello?
Okay.
I'm sorry, I had my phone muted.
Okay. Okay.
I was afraid some of that
okay.
background noise was coming from my office, so I muted
okay.
my phone.
Okay.
My email address is ghannee@eicc.edu, or my phone number, 563-441-4081.
Great.
Just give me a call.
Short time frame. if anyone wants to attend and they're really serious about starting one of these programs, it's a great program to attend. The regional reps will be there, all the mentors, our past grantees will be there, and current grantees. So, and all the EPA headquarters people will be there too. And you get a good rundown of the EPA grant regulations, and we break out into small groups. One other thing that I want to mention before we get started real quick is you may have heard some things that are going around. There's two things that are happening. We've got, of course, we all know we have a very conservative House of Representatives. The Senate is more balanced, and there are a lot of things going on. In addition to Obamacare, there's the 50 or 60 votes that they've tried to kill Obamacare for. They've been in it. EPA has always been a target of the conservative wing of the Republican Party, and there have been notices and things you've gone around where they've been trying to kill appropriations for not only for training but for all brownfields. And you may hear about that. Everyone, we were working on this last fall. There's a bill, House Bill 803. They're trying to restructure the Job Training Act, and which would take training out of EPA. But we worked on that, and they say the chance of that surviving the Senate, it passed the House, which was a conservative House, chance of getting past the Senate are about 9%. So it's not likely that it'll go anywhere. We always have to be vigilant, though. In the House, there is an effort to not appropriate any funding for all brownfields. That will probably, again, not get to the Senate, or if it may even pass the House, but in the appropriations, but hopefully it won't get anywhere in the Senate. So, but you may hear about it, and there may be a time that'll come up, and I don't know if it'll come up in August, but there may be a time when we'll have an opportunity to work with our representatives to make sure that it doesn't get past the House. Right now, there's just a lot of these kind of bills going on, and you've got to take them all serious, but I wouldn't start planning thinking that these programs are going to go away. In fact, it seems like the EPA program is actually expanding, and what Joe is trying to do is bring in other programs within EPA to enhance his program. And this year, interestingly enough, because of all the cutbacks, you would think this program would be diminished, but it's actually been one of the biggest programs since the stimulus program. It's the largest grant program that environmental workforce program that EPA has ever had. So it's moving in a positive direction. The only exception is these bills that you may hear that they're trying to kill brownfields, they're trying to kill training, and we just have to be vigilant and watch that. But I wouldn't strike too many alarms at this point. We're keeping up on that. One of the things we like to do, though, is we do want to talk to people who have exemplary programs, and of course, ART has one of the best programs in the EPA arsenal of job training programs. He's one of our oldest grant programs. I think originally ART were funded with the under the PIC. This was the old Oakland Private Industry Council. They were funded back in 1998, and then. At that time, the grants were for about $125,000, and then they were refunded in 2004.
Mike, if I could interrupt for a second, I'm sorry. And before you get to introducing ART, I'm having a very, very difficult time hearing. There's still a lot of people that don't have their phones on mute. And if everybody could please just mute their phones while ART is talking, and then when you have questions, you can unmute your phones, of course, but so everyone can hear. Thank you.
Great. And there's different ways of muting your phone, too. I think you could also hit #6. I think that'll mute also. So the Private Industry Council had two grants, and then since that time, ART's been funded in 2008, 2009, and 2012, and he actually got a $500,000 stimulus grant. And Art has got quite an interesting program. He's got one of those, what I consider hybrid programs. It combines construction trades with the environmental training. He is one of those stars of the program, and he trains an incredible number of people, more than any other grantee. And he's going to tell us a little bit about that. Art, do you want to go ahead and tell us about your program?
Sure. Just very quick, I'd like to say hello to everybody. And I'm Art Shanks out of Oakland, California. I want to thank both Mike and Glo for having me on today. Briefly, our program got started because of the Loma Prieta earthquake back in 1989. We had an earthquake here that was pretty radical, and it dropped the Cypress Freeway, which sits one block behind us. Out of that, community activists and residents got together, and they wanted to ensure that community residents were going to get jobs on that freeway when they went back up. So Federal Highways put up $250,000 for a program. Can everybody hear me okay? And out of that, I'm sorry. Everybody can hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So out of that, the funding was inadequate. I told them that they needed a minimum of $450,000 to get a program started, and this was back in 1993. We got that funding, and 20 years later, a few transitions happened, but we're still in business. In 2004, we separated from the Oakland Private Industry Council, who we were initially under, and started our independent nonprofit. So from 2004 to now, we've been operating independent from the PIG. And I would say our methodology hasn't changed. We believe in making change in the community. So what we focus on, the age group between 18 to 24 years. Oh, we bring in every bit of maybe 45 to 55 kids per cohort. We do three per year. Out of those cohorts, we probably have interest from about 250 people that show up at the orientation, and we put them through a quick orientation and then an assessment, and then we have a personal interview for each one of the students, and then a selection committee makes a selection of the students that come into the center. We're looking for students that are at least on the 7th or 8th grade level to make sure that they can matriculate into the workforce. So a rigorous training program here with our life skills component, which is not paid by EPA, puts them through time management, financial management, sexual harassment, toxic relationships, and just overall a work to core process is a life skills component that was initially augmented with our pre-apprenticeship component. And then we had a special environmental component that was a three-week component just by itself. So initially our program was a 16-week program. And now with the new changes under EPA, the component that we have now is an 8-week environmental training program. So again, our students were able to go into several different venues. Out here, we're very strong, union-based, so all our students, basically, I would say 99.5% of them go into union work. And out of the out of that, students generally wage will start between the rate of anywhere of $17 to $50 an hour, predicated on what company he goes to work for, what cleanup or what work aspect he's doing. So with that, what makes our program sustainable? I think how we're able to sustain our program this far is because we put out a product that contractors wanted. We listened to what they wanted. They wanted somebody who was drug-free, somebody that was dependable, and somebody that had reliable transportation. So those were some of the things that we looked for. What makes our program work, I believe, is my staff. Everybody here is a sheriff. We're all on the same page. We're all pulling in the same directions. It's a tough boot camp style training. We still have that policy even with our environmental aspect, which means every student is uniformed. There's no cell phones, pagers, bandanas, no jewelry, none of the fancy stuff, and no cell phones. It's all about business. And what happens is when you put that product out that the employer wants, he's looking for somebody that's dependable, that's drug-free, and it's reliable. When you give mandate what he wants, then they're going to come back to you over and over and over. How do you get them to buy into the process? Is by bringing them to your program, show them what effective mechanism you have that's going to make his workforce and the people that you're going to be integrating into his workforce a successful marriage. That successful marriage is going to give him longevity and it's going to save him money. And that's what contractors are in business for, to make money. So some of the strategies that we used here, again, was to make sure that students came here on time. So we started 7 o'clock in the morning. We ended 3:30. The process hasn't changed. We operate 5 days out of the week. This program is not a stipend program, so students don't get one dime to come. This is an Earn Me program. And again, it's a boot-style training program, which means it's very rigorous. There is a physical training component to this the students have to do every single day to make sure that they can mandate the physical training on those job sites. And if anybody thinks putting a level A suit on is easy and working in that level A suit or a Tyvek suit all day is easy, it's not. So they have to pass the medical, they have to be able to pass the respirator fit test, which means they must be clean of facial hairs. All those aspects are what we integrated into the training process to make sure that students will be successful. And the biggest thing I would say that really helped us with the contractors in terms of them hiring our students was making sure that our students had a good and positive attitude and they would work overtime and do whatever that contractor asked to get his job task completed. So contractors like that type of individual that's going to work hard and it's going to make them money. And I would say the success of this program is predicated solely on those students that have forged those relationships that we indicated and allowed the opportunity to the students to come behind them, standing on their shoulders to make that success rate. So that's pretty much the nut and bolts of the operation here. Our operation costs about $1.5 million annually to run, and the biggest struggle, I would say, is always securing additional funding. As you know, leverage funding is one of the hardest things to do if you don't have enough funding from one area to another area, and most of the federal grants don't want to see duplication. But I think there's nothing wrong with duplication, because if you take, for example, the $200,000 from EPA, $200,000 will not fund the program. But if there's some overlap or some duplication, I don't see anything wrong with that, but some programs or government programs think, or government agencies think that that's an issue. But again, I would say funding is always the toughest challenges. Those budgets are very critical, and that's probably one of the toughest things. And I would say the second toughest thing is always getting students to be drug-free, getting them off those drugs. Mike, did you have any further questions?
Yeah, it's interesting. Now, you bring them in. Your program is a trades apprentice, pre-apprentice program, and as I understand it, you're training them the construction trades, and then you take the best, and this is very similar to what we were talking about last week with Oregon Tradeswomen. The model was, and you could correct me, but what Oregon Tradeswomen said last week was they would bring people in, and then they would observe them, and then they took select few, and they would move them into the environmental. Those were that were interested in environmental went on to the additional course. Is that the way you work, or do they all flow right through?
We always operated a pre-apprenticeship program that was augmented with the environmental. So our 3-week environmental program now is a 8-week environmental program. So that's absolutely correct. And we wanted to have the best students matriculate into the environmental.
So not everyone necessarily will go into environmental.
No, absolutely not. We would train maybe up to about 25 students for the environmental. And in the pre-apprenticeship program, we take in between 45 and 55 students. So So out of that 55 students, will be slated for the environmental program.
It's an interesting model, and some people are using this model and then others are not. Another interesting thing about your program is you really don't use the job training centers or the Department of Labor centers, do you, at all, in terms of referrals and placements? You're pretty much independent, aren't you?
Pretty much, yes.
Which is another interesting and different than other programs. We'll be talking to some programs that rely heavily on the recruitment and placement through the job training programs because they have very strong Department of Labor programs and they get some funding from that too. And then we've got some programs such as yours, which you're pretty much standalone, although you do have a lot of partners. Partners are industry partners, it seems. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Can you hear me okay, Mike? Hello?
I can hear you, Art.
Okay.
I was saying I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's exactly how we operate. So, again, the idea was to take community residents that were impoverished, that didn't have a good education and was lacking and then maybe had some barriers and retrain them into some meaningful employment where they would have a career. We were looking for more of the careers, not just the jobs. So, again, we're a strong union-based area here in the Bay Area. The Bay Area is probably one of the highest paying areas in the United States of America.
Do you have a special agreement with the unions where they take all of your graduates and go into a pre-apprentice, or how does that work?
We have pretty much constructed what is known as direct entry. There are PLA agreements, and PLA are project labor agreements. They are established by unions or counties or building trades. And those agreements allow certain concessions for community residents and residency requirements to go to work on those projects. So our program is an approved program and endorsed by pretty much everybody in the building trades and Alameda County building trades and Contra Contra building trades. So what that does, allow us to have what's known as direct entry. Students don't go on a list. They go directly to work when they leave here. So they get first priority on any job assignment.
In the notes, we'll talk about project labor agreements, PLAs. They're really important, and everyone should look to see. They're more prevalent in larger urban areas like the Bay Area, down in L.A., Chicago, Philadelphia. Project labor agreements is when someone like Donald Trump or someone wants, or the city wants to build a transportation system or a highway, rather than worry about having a strike, they'll enter into a PLA, project labor agreement. And this is the point in time where the local organizations, such as ARTS, have a chance to negotiate that says you will hire as part of the PLA local residents. And, of course, they say, well, we don't have trained local residents, and that's where people like ARTS program or some of your programs that are in these PLA communities can shine because you say, well, we do have trained, certified people. And at that point, as Art said, you're kind of in like Flynn, aren't you, where they're actually looking for workers to satisfy the PLA agreement. And that's a big plus. Now, the question is, how do you find out if there's a PLA in your area? And it evolved for you, didn't it, Art?
You know, one of the things, usually city councils will come up and they will have a project that a contractor is going to be bringing into the fold. And if that is the case, you would find out it then. If there's any pre-bid conferences on any large construction area, that's definitely where you want to make sure you're honed in at. So like in our area, we have several mega projects like the Bay Bridge project, the Caldecott Tunnel, the Oakland Airport, or BART extension. Or schools, are redistricting those schools. Those are the areas you really want to focus on, or if you have any Army bases where you will want to institute a PLA agreement. And not only just a PLA agreement, you can have a first ordinance for a hire agreement with the city. You can get your city or your county to put that kind of enforcement in place. It doesn't necessarily have to be a PLA, but a first hire source agreement in place that would help push those students into employment.
And the key there is to make sure that people in City Hall on the first hire ordinance know that you're producing certified trained people, because, again, some of the contractors will use the excuse, well, we placed a notice up on the bulletin board on the second floor and no one responded, so we didn't have any response, so there are no trained people. So it's an out that we've heard that's in some communities used, but if you're people in City Hall who are involved in the contracting are aware of your program, they'll say, well, wait a second, you know, you can go to Cypress and check with them because they have trained certified people. And it's a great way to place. Now, do you track your graduates, Art?
Yes, tracking is very important. So, again, we place the students into bona fide apprenticeship programs. We track our kids all the way through their journeyman, which is well over a five-year period, and then we do an alumni, which tracks them all the way through the very beginning of time when we had them. So students come back for an alumni dinner or benefit that we put on annually once a year, and we track the students through the contractors or employers. We also track them through a means of when we do our job club and update information. We also track them through the coordinators of each union. So each business agent will keep up with them, as well as the union and the trust fund. So there's several ways that we track our students. The students, we have trained them to, once they leave here, to always keep coming back in and updating our information.
That's great to keep in track. It's a good recruitment tool. And you also have recruitment videos. Hopefully you'll be able to bring one of those videos to the annual workshop, and we'll show it after the sessions. Is any of that on the web at all? Or they could certainly go to your website, I guess.
Well, there's a lot of information on the website. But if there's any specific questions, maybe some of that might not fit some of the individuals from their areas, I'd be more than glad to talk to them and answer any of their questions.
Great. Anyone have any additional questions for Art?
No, I do not.
Anyone else? Okay. It's been great. Art, I'm hoping that if anyone does have questions. Yes.
What environmental credentials do students get from ERCT's program that go through the environmental track?
So students are certified in our 40-hour hazardous waste. They're certified in the 32-hour lead, in the 32-hour asbestos. They're certified in confined space to 16 hours. Certified in first aid and CPR. And also, now those are just the certifications in the environmental that we give. We also have, those are the state certifications that they will receive. They also receive our pre-apprenticeship certification, which is like a mini Harvard degree, if you will. And every contractor knows what that is, as well as what the environmental certifications. So those are the certifications that students will receive here. In addition to that, they also receive anywhere between 6 and 18 units of college credit. We're partnered with the local Peralta College Association and also UC Berkeley. UC Berkeley, they receive a certification for the 10-hour OSHA.
The general construction?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you do spill response at all, or you're mostly in the remediation?
We do both. Those are the certifications that students will have when they leave here.
One last question I have is, what is this thing about the bones that was in the press release? You were honored by EPA And you're not only your favorite son of theirs in the regional office. They honored you with in your graduation class. This is another interesting thing that I think that some of our best grantees do. They bring in EPA, and often they bring in congressmen into their graduations, and it's a great photo op for congressmen. Gives you a lot of visibility. This was a press release. Now, you've been graduating hundreds of people every year, but you got a national press release from EPA on one of your graduations. But in that press release, they talked about cleaning up lead with bones. What's that about?
Well, you know, we partnered with a contractor here, which was SF Chemical, and we partnered with EPA on this to do one of the pilot programs where we took fish bones, mixed them in the soil to do de-leading of the soil and the contaminants, and it was a pilot project that was done in a large area of West Oakland to see if it would be proficient, and if it was, and it would go across the country, the United States. Now, this was an old technique that was used by Native Americans back in the day, which was very successful. And we found out that it was very successful, so successful that Jacques Cousteau's son came in and got involved with the process, and it went over very well. So all those areas in West Oakland, which were a lot of resident area, was reacclimated and de-leaded and came out 100% proficient. So they were looking very well when they did the test on the soil. It was reading almost very lower at zero.
Interesting. Interesting. If there's any other questions, I don't know if there are, but thanks, Art. We're going to be looking forward to seeing you face-to-face at the annual meeting and breaking out into small groups. And hopefully, if it's okay, if anyone needs to contact you, I'll put your contact information in the post-session notes. So they
sure,
can,
absolutely. Does anybody have any questions?
No, I do not.
Okay. Well, good luck to each and every one of you. If you feel free to give me a call if you find you need to talk to me or have any questions. Thank you, Mike and Glo.
Thank
you,
Art.
Thank you,
and have a good
trip.
You got, you're on your way to the airport, I guess, this afternoon. Take care now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.